Well, let's take a vote. Do we want to hit up some debate with Up, or do we want to get to a comic talk first?
I don't know.
What's the debate? I mean, Tim is a soulless person. That's about the end of it.
I guess
right
we're going
there.
Into Up. Well, yeah.
Now here's the thing.
Here's
the ground rules.
For you new listeners, Tim has a serious disability, and somehow he ended up watching the movie Up and just not liking it really at all. And
I did go to the doctor after that, and it just said, yes, I was mentally retarded,
And then you had a daughter, which was not fair.
Not a good idea.
For society. So, Eddie, of course, I don't know how I want to start this exactly, but...
Ray decided he didn't want to debate me at 1-on-1, so he needed to be 2-on-1.
I'm going to try to stay out of it, because I know Eddie has a big beef over this, and I know
I
you...
Do? Really?
Well,
how does he know this? get out of my head!
It's your daily Facebook and Twitter posts about it.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's all I've been... That's all I've been really focused on ever since the movie came out, really, was...
Mm-hmm. So, like, for example, when Tim, when you first said, oh, I didn't like Up, I was like, what was wrong with it? Like, give me some examples. What was wrong with it? I don't know if that's where you want to start, but...
Well, no, I have a new place to start here. You know, Ray, we've talked a number of times about Up, so you know probably better than the podcast listeners my real point of view on the movie, and that is, I'll dramatically say, oh, it was awful. But in reality, it was not up to Pixar standards, in my opinion. And so even it being not one of the best Pixar movies, still makes it a very good movie in a lot of ways. And I can start there and just say, look, the music is phenomenal in the movie. Ellie's...
That's a great point. Yeah,
that's a nice backhanded compliment. It's like I'm in theater and someone comes to see your show and like, oh hey, so did you enjoy it? Did you like the show? You know, the music
was
really
good.
Phenomenal. Like, okay, thanks.
Okay, just hear me out. Hear me out, guys.
Okay.
The music was wonderful. Ellie's theme being played throughout in different ways and in different styles. And
that's a good point.
And all of that was, I mean, that'll stick with me forever. I love that theme that they stick in there over and over again.
But now it's tainted.
The animation, obviously, extremely well done. There were a lot of things to like about the movie. The opening 10-minute montage with going through Carl and Ellie's life, that right there, that could be, an Oscar-winning short if it weren't part of the movie, you know what I mean?
Right,
like,
yeah. Like, thank you.
Just, what, did you have something to do with it, or?
Yeah,
you thought it up.
It was my idea, so.
Oh,
you
wow,
know.
Well.
I'm glad that you can recognize that.
Yes.
I'm like, if you can't appreciate that sequence, then there's a serious deficiency in your moral status.
Well, I can recognize that. And I think... And, I've seen the movie a second time since seeing it in the theater, and I saw it again with the director commentary just to see kind of what was going on in their heads. And that was actually, that was really good to see, because you see the thought put into it in places that, your first time through in the movie, sometimes even the second time through, I didn't notice things like one example is when he meets Ellie and Ellie's got the little control panel pretending to fly the house, the spirit of adventure, He sets up when he actually flies the house, he sets up his little control area in that exact same spot, kind of, And it's...
Yeah, I noticed that.
It's kind of related to... Yeah. Anyway, so there's a lot of little things that they do that you can really appreciate just hearing their thought process. But to me, it was a movie that had a lot of missed opportunities and inconsistencies in the storytelling. And if that's where we want to go with what I found wrong with it, we can start there. A movie sets up the world that it wants you to see. If you look at, Finding Nemo, you don't go into the movie Finding Nemo and say, wait, the fish talk? Like, what the heck kind of world is this? Like, that's right. not real. I mean, that's the world that they present to you, and so you take that in that context, you know? What was jarring to me about Up was that, you know, the first 10 minutes, we've got this montage, you know, Carl's whole life. There's loss, you know, with them not being able to have kids. There's death. Then you know, Carl hits the guy in the head, and there's blood for the first time in a Pixar movie, you know, and you kind of get the sense of this, what real life is like, and even all that he's trying to escape in some ways. And, you know, then you go to the jungle, and there can be, in my opinion, there can be some leeway there. You can kind of set up the jungle as kind of like a, you know, as a mysterious place where certain things don't necessarily jive with what you're used to. But they go so far off the deep end with what happens out there. It's very weird. And it puts you in a place where you don't know, am I supposed to be worried about their well-being right now or not? Because half the time, you know, danger comes about and it's just no big deal. It's kind of a joke. It's kind of funny. And the other half of the time, you think about it, you're like, wow, that person's really in serious danger. And so it was hard to feel much for the characters in the jungle when you really don't know, you know, is this a real thing or is this a fake thing? Is this a joke for the kids or is this something that, you know, we're supposed to be connecting with? For one example of that to me was when Russell's hanging towards the end and, you know, he's hanging from the house by the hose and the dogs are coming by with the machine gun tranquilizer darts, you know.
Right.
It's kind of a funny thing, like these dogs and airplanes. To me, it was stupid, but, you know, they're going after, you know, Muntz is like, go after him, blah, blah, blah. And you think, I sit back and think after watching it a couple times, I'm like, if they actually hit him with one of those darts, he's going to pass out and die. Like, he's going to fall to his death. But during the movie, and maybe this is just me, but I was never worried about Russell's well-being. I didn't think, what's going to happen to Russell, you know? Because it was such a silly scene. Did you feel that way at all?
Well, I would say that I agree that you're right, that it does take a tonal shift with the dogs, and that's mostly a comedic aspect of it that, and yeah, in some sense, it doesn't really fit with the beginning of the movie. And actually, I kind of think that's what I like about the movie, is that it has a lot of everything. You know, it has this fantasy aspect, it has this reality aspect, it has comedy and tragedy. There's sort of like every emotion is sort of in this movie at different places. When I saw the first half of the movie that was previewed at WonderCon in San Francisco, you know, I really enjoyed what I saw. And then they said, oh, and by the way, you know, we haven't even gotten to like any of the action sequences. That stuff's not done yet. So I was like, I was thinking, wow, this is going to be even different, even more different. Like I mean, what I saw, and yet I didn't see any action sequences.
Mm-hmm.
It really only got up to the part where they were in the jungle with the bird. So when I saw for the fully out, I really enjoyed that it shifted some more, and there was sort of a bigger picture. But yeah, I mean the dogs like flying in these planes is just kind of silly. I mean, it's funny that the concept of them flying these is pretty much ridiculous, you know. And no, I didn't feel scared for Russell. Like, oh, he's gonna get killed by the dogs. Like, I didn't really think that. But certainly, like, if you have any fear of heights, and you know, I don't have a fear of heights. I just have a fear of falling from heights, really. I was worried that he's going to fall off this thing. It's really tenuous. Like, every time he's sliding towards the door, you know, when he's sitting in that chair, he's tied in the chair and he's trying to, you know, get free and he's sliding out towards the door and I'm like, oh geez, you know, he's going to fall out. And, but I mean, like most movies, you don't ever really have the sense that the protagonist is going to die. 'Cause you're like, that's not how this movie is going to end. You know, like this would be like the worst Pixar movie in the world. If like the right. little kid dies, you know, like 15 minutes before the movie ends.
I'm always up for the main character dying by the end of the movie, but that wouldn't have been a great situation.
No pun intended.
Yeah, I think, and then there's another part where you see blood, a second time you see blood is when the bird, Kevin gets bit by the dog, and then Russell's, you know, taping up his leg, and there's blood that's coming through it. And that was weird to me, too. I'm like, oh, so things, bad things could actually happen here. And it kind of seemed like this in and out, like, you know, I don't know what to feel, but sometimes bad things can happen, and sometimes, it, you know, that sense of danger doesn't seem to really be there.
Yeah, I would say that to me, the real sort of inconsistency is, and I'm trying to, Carl's age.
Yeah, I was going to go there
like
next.
Like at the very, you know, when we first see him as old and he's coming down the stairs, it's like, he can't even come down the stairs.
Right,
you know?
He can't
even
walk down the set of stairs.
And yet, by the end of the movie, he's like sword fighting and he's climbing up the side of a dirigible, like really quickly.
Not even the side, but like the under, you know, the ladder thing goes underneath.
That is really difficult. If you've ever done any kind of like indoor climbing, you know, and it's one thing to just go straight up. I mean, that's not necessarily easy. You have to have some strength to do that. But then when you're upside down, it is really difficult because the pull of gravity on your body is really intense. And when I saw that, I was just like, yeah, right. And and he's doing it really quickly too. They're like, okay, come on, let's get out of here this way. Like, no, it's not gonna. Yeah. That would not happen. And so like I that for me was like the one.
Well, and that
the thing to drop it down to like the 99 out of 100, you know, level.
Right. Okay. Well, that it took a few more points from the movie for me, but yeah, I mean, Carl is supposed to be 78 years old in the movie, and again, yeah, you see this frailty throughout, you know, at the beginning, and then it's almost from the get go, you know, from the start of the journey, just being able to drag the house through the jungle and like. Stop it on a dime, and when they're about to go over the edge there. I mean, all this action, and then it just gets worse. Like you said, there's sword fighting and climbing up a blimp. Like, things that good athletes would have a difficult time doing, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you would just be out of breath at the least. You know, you'd be like, oh,
and yet
I
he's
can't.
Got like the walker strapped to his back, and he's like this action hero. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then Muntz is supposed to be 92 in the movie, which even that is a stretch to me. For one, he references, you know, doing stuff with Teddy Roosevelt, which would put him well over 100 years old. But you know, the stated age of him is 92. Okay, so we'll take that. But he never looks old. I mean, he never shows
he never shows
the signs of age until
physically
they put that,
he doesn't
right
yeah.
until he puts that one comic relief scene in there where they're doing the sword fight and then they both have like their back go out or whatever.
Yeah, and that's fun. You know, I mean, that's a funny sequence. I like, you know, that they add a little bit of levity to this, like,
right.
Here's a couple of old guys do in an action sequence. Like, right. How would this really be? And I actually like that. And so then it's sort of surprising when they sort of reverse it and they're like, well, now they're running around freely.
Right. And it wasn't like, well, here's how old guys would realistically be fighting. It's just like, comically, this is what they would, you know.
Yeah, that scene out of context is very funny to me, you know? But when you put it in there, while it works as a funny scene, and maybe you need comic relief at that point of the film, it really, you know, takes you back to that, oh yeah, Carl was this old guy that could barely do anything. And then they go to the point where they do even more, you know, action-oriented things. So that didn't flow well for me with the age issue there.
It's interesting that you say that this rates lower on your Pixar list, because I find it fascinating how different everyone's list is. When you if they were to rank their Pixar movies from favorite to least favorite, everybody has such a different list.
Yeah.
And it's not even just like, well, we quibble about which one is on top. It's like, someone can have a movie at the top of their list that is on the
bottom
of my
yeah.
list.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And vice versa. Like, to me, like, this, oh, this is the best one. This is so incredible. And they're like, oh, I didn't like that one at all. It's on the bottom of my
and
list.
And most friends I talk to really don't like Cars. Like, I mean,
yeah,
they,
I
to
think
the point
you're right.
where to the point where they're like, I don't even like to think of it as a Pixar film because it's just not good.
Right, and that's an age level thing, because if you would ask, like, someone under the age of 12, like, where they would rank Cars, they generally rank it very, very high.
Yeah, but like, that's like me asking the 12-year-olds and under what they think of Sonic, you know, the Werehog.
But you're invalidating their opinion. I mean, that's how they feel about it. I love that movie. You know,
that's
and someone
with
and someone like us, it's a little bit older. It's like, yeah, Cars, not so much. You know, I mean, that's the thing. Everybody is different, and for me personally, like, do you don't like Monsters Inc. that much. I don't think it's very great. But some people, it's their number one Pixar film. They're like, oh, Monsters, Inc. is my favorite.
So do you think, like, most kids don't like Monsters, Inc., maybe? Because it's more about the conversations than it is the goofy stuff that happens within it?
I think kids like Monsters, Inc.
I think they do.
The thing is, I think Pixar is most successful in making movies, when they make movies that can appeal to both kids and adults at the same time.
Right, right.
And... you know, with Cars, you get a movie that mostly kids enjoy, so, you know, we're like, eh. And then there's other movies that kids, you know, might not like as much, like, I don't know if WALL-E would count, or Ratatouille possibly, but they work on a level that adults can enjoy. So, but the ones that they're most successful with, I think, have been, like, Finding Nemo, Monsters, Inc., Incredibles, where you can both enjoy it at the same time on the same level. The problem with Up for me was that instead of being consistently good to both kids and adults at the same time, for me, it seemed like certain parts of the movie were meant for kids and certain parts were meant for adults. You know what I mean? Like, Talking Dogs, that we got to throw that in there for the kids. Like, some of the comic relief stuff, got
to
throw that in there.
But I thought the Talking Dogs to me was just hilarious.
Mm.
You know? I mean... And I'm not a kid anymore, I'll tell you. I mean, I thought and part of it, I think, is, again, what you're expecting and what, because when I saw the first half of it again, this was way back in February when all you had seen was the teaser trailer. That was right. It was like, it was just the house lifting off and that was it. That's all you knew about this movie. And I was like, I don't know about this. Like, this doesn't seem, because a lot of times with animated movies, it's like, well, This needs to be animated because you can do things in animation you can't do in real life. And then when I saw this saw the trailer, I'm like, well, it has real humans in it, and it has a house lifting up with balloons. I'm like, why does this need to be animated? What's the point? You know, why can't you just make a live action movie with some computer generated effects for the house? And so I didn't have like real great expectations. And when I saw the first half, and then the dogs show up out of nowhere, you know, I'm not expecting it at all. And then the Doberman Pinscher has this voice and I'm just cracking up. I'm like, this is funny. I'm like, this is a good movie. People need to see this. This is really funny. People are going to laugh. Now, if you see a bunch of ads that's like, oh, hey, meet Doug, he talks, you know, and then you are going to the movie and you're like, well, there's going to be a talking dog. I'm waiting for the dog to talk. You know, you're not surprised by that. And so that has a big difference.
I'm telling you, I've said it a million times, I'll say it again. Expectations are a serious problem in this world. And like, that's just another example. Cause I think the element of surprise is lost through commercials. I mean, I always find it so interesting how difficult it is to advertise what you want to see in a movie and still, it's kind of like when Superbad came out, you know, and we went to go see it and they were like, wow, that was crazy with the language. Like, but I never would have known from the commercials because they couldn't,
because
like,
not able
I'm like,
to
I'm surprised they could even use 2 seconds straight in a commercial because every other word they're swearing. Like, it's just bizarre.
Yeah,
and the same thing with the snipe. I mean, that the bird character, Kevin. I didn't know that was coming. So that was a surprise to me. And I don't know what you can do about that, because people don't want to go see a movie unless they kind of know what's in it. And so you have to show some of that stuff and to get people to go see it. So,
well, to talk about the dogs for a minute, I will admit Doug is a good character, a very good character. And the reason he's different to me than the other talking dogs is because when he talks like we would think dogs think. You know what I mean? Like
right, yeah. Squirrel.
The humor in Doug is just that loyalty, that instant love.
Yeah.
Kind of the not dumb, but the simple way that he thinks,
simple.
You know?
Yes.
I do like that a lot, and that makes him very lovable, and you like that he just always comes back, like, dogs are always loyal, even if you, you know, beat them or whatever, I don't know. But
that's the message that we should get from up, everyone.
How's Lily
if you're
done?
Just joining us on today's podcast, Tim Harding says that even if you beat a dog, they should remain loyal to you.
Yes,
How's Lily doing, by the way?
Oh, she's doing great. Very loyal.
Good. Yeah.
But Doug works on that level, and even though I'll get there in a second. But the other dogs, to me, just kind of fall into the henchman category, which is very conventional for cartoon stories, and they don't talk like dogs think. They think like henchmen, like, oh, our boss wants us to get that bird, or our boss wants us to, we will do this and we will do that, and they come up with this way that Alpha talks that's really weird to me. Maybe it didn't bother you guys, but they just made his speech really disjointed, as though that were how a dog thinks. Like he would say, this we will do, will we not, sort of thing. You know what I mean? Like, almost like a Yoda type of
patterns.
Yeah, and I'm like, well, he's still thinking the same thoughts. He's just not making complete sentences, which doesn't, to me, say, oh, yeah, dogs totally do that, you know? Doug portrayed that really well. The other dogs were kind of just there, and
I like the Delroy Lindo voice dog. I thought he was good, you know.
But I think the voice almost was necessary to give him something to laugh at, I guess. I mean, he wasn't much of a character outside of being a funny voice to me.
Well, that was, I think,
it seems like a crutch.
That's the point. Is that he's this imposing figure. You look at a German Shepherd, and it's like, wow, he's fearsome. And then when that voice comes out, it's like, oh my gosh, that's hilarious, you know, and that's why the dogs laugh at it.
That's what makes the character. Like, that's, yeah.
And the other thing was,
like, you would be scared of him, you know, and Doug is scared of him.
Right.
Like, what's going to happen?
The other thing is, you know, the squirrel joke, you know, once is enough, twice, okay, that's max there.
The comedy rule of threes,
yeah, but they did it like three or four times.
It might still be there.
It might still be at the correct rule of
three. We're going to have to send Ray back to the theater to count them, since we know he's so good at counting things.
Again, you saw Paranormal Activity, right, Eddie?
I did,
How
yes.
many F-words were in that movie?
Like two, in my opinion.
I know, right?
Yeah, see, Ray's going to go back and say, I didn't hear the word squirrel once. But you know, they did the joke identically each time with squirrel, like squirrel, and they
that's how it's funny. Like, that's
no,
why
no,
it's funny because
no,
I
no, no, like, sorry, totally sorry, they should have built
how,
on
no,
it if they were going to do
that's
it
how
again.
Dogs work. Like, it doesn't matter what situation they're in; they'll just do that.
It's that short term memory.
Yeah, it's the reaction, just the impulse reaction sort of style. Like, so you can't really do it any different. Like, you just have to do it the same way. Three times.
Well,
what also makes it funny is that, you know, there's no squirrels on that whole place.
But here's one way they talked about doing it. They were going to put an actual squirrel in there when they were in the planes, and they would say squirrel, and they were going to actually go after the squirrel, and that's how the planes were going to crash, instead of just saying it and the planes crash. And to me, that's funnier. Like, oh, look, there's actually a squirrel this time. Like, they finally put a squirrel in there.
It's funnier to me that there's not, because it's more like, wow, what a stupid dog. You know, like, they just hear a noise, and they're like, oh, there's a squirrel. You know?
But then it would fall into, like, that Jar Jar Binks wins the battle scene of Star Wars 1 style, where it's like, oh, look, there just happened to be a squirrel there to save the scene, right? Like, I think you would be more upset over that.
Well, and
I think there should have been a squirrel flying a plane, and it should have shot them all down.
The
squirrel is like, yeah!
The truth is, they've never seen a squirrel in their lives, so it's ridiculous anyway.
That's what's funny. That's what makes it funny.
You know, okay, let's get into this collar thing, okay?
Oh, we're taking calls?
No, the dog collar. Months goes into the jungle 60 years ago, before the invention of the internet, any kind of wireless technologies, before any of this stuff exists, and yet he comes up with a GPS wireless, apparently, you know, practically batteryless device that can translate a dog's thoughts and turn it into speech.
Yeah.
And somehow
the Mayans had a power source, you know? I mean, it's like, get you know, it's like there are anachronisms, you know, in time about you know, who can do what. I mean, look at MacGyver. I mean, look at all he did, you know, way ahead of time.
Yeah, well, I don't buy it. It bothers me. And the fact that the blimp can still fly after not flying for 60 years, just ridiculous.
You know, you got to take good care of your stuff, you know. I love how by the way, everyone, Tim sent us this great email. Where
he never responded, so I was wondering what you thought.
Because I was like, what's to respond to? I'm like, you don't, you know, enable the disabled here by responding to something and like encouraging him, like just let it go. He doesn't, I wanted to pat the email on the head, you know, sort of patronizingly. Because it was like, here's this image of the house lifting up. And he's like, look at the porch. And because I was like, why am I looking at the porch? You know, and I'm gonna say, I guess you wanted me to look at the porch because there wasn't anyone on the porch.
Correct. Yes.
And then in a later scene, it's like, hey, Russell's on the porch, you know? Well, no friggin' duh. I mean, that like if you showed Russell on the porch ahead of time, it wouldn't really be much of a surprise.
Yeah, I'm
when
not
someone
suggesting you show
on
Russell
the
on the
door.
Porch. I'm suggesting you don't show the porch as it's taking off. You can show the house from above.
But see,
you can
that's
show
what
it from
makes
the
it,
side.
That's what makes it funnier to me is because then when he's like, in the house and there's a knock on the door, it's like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Like how? And then he opens the door like, how'd you get, like, how are you still here? Like, that is, like, that's part of the
it's
humor
a,
of it.
It's
like,
a cartoonish aspect. I mean,
right.
it's funnier like, to you when they make no sense at all. Okay, got
I'm
it.
I'm like, this is like if engineers made movies.
It would have been really
why
funny.
Don't. This is
no,
why engineers
really
don't make
movies.
It would
be really funny if Ellie just came back from the dead. Because that makes no sense at all. But, you know, it'd be so hilarious.
Rise from your grave.
Great. I mean, that's hilarious.
I've been
reading
TV Star for many years, but I don't get any of the jokes.
This is the Grave Riser segment. Hi, this is Ellie. I don't get the dog collars. Tim's like, finally, vindication.
Okay, a couple other points here, okay?
All right, make it a half hour. Make it snappy.
You know what, Ray? I was going to tell you last night, I think the Up episode needs to be an episode on its own because we're not going to get to anything else. But okay.
No, anything where you talk for more than 20 minutes straight does not need its own episode.
Okay, hear me out. On the blimp,
it's a DVD
Doug,
extra.
Doug knocks it. Okay, they're doing the sword fight. They're about to, like, you know, kill off Carl. And Doug slides back in the control room and hits this lever. And what does the lever do? Do you remember?
No.
It rolls the blimp.
It rolls the blimp. Can you tell me what the purpose of rolling a blimp is and why there'd be a lever to do something stupid like that?
Hey, what's the purpose of a blimp in the first place? I'm like, let's fill up a giant balloon with like you know, flammable gas that when, you know, just if someone lit a match, like, we'd all die, you know? That's a good idea.
Well, it actually happened,
did
though.
It.
They actually
but
did
we,
that.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like... And yet we still make blimps after that. You know, it's like, really
but
good year.
Don't
you have
do
a
barrel roll,
you have
okay?
A, blimps your
don't
lesson.
Do barrel rolls.
Yeah, but Munce is a pretty adventurous guy, you know? Like, imagine if you were flying and there was, like, coming up is like, oh my gosh, there's a really narrow place. Like, we've got to do a barrel roll, you know?
Right.
I think this needs to be a two-piece art comic. And you have Donkey Kong on the dirigible and he's like, barrel roll. He
do
was the designer.
Roll.
He was the designer of this blimp. And he's
apparently.
Like, I'm adding a barrel roll because I'm Donkey Kong.
It reminds me of Stardust when they have like these Skies of Arcadia style, you know, like
flying
pirate ships in the air, right? And like it's like nose, it's like pulling up and down, and they're like, and they have a big wheel that they're turning, you know, like they're turning a wheel and it's going up and down. Like, wait, does the wheel control left and right, or like, well, how does this work exactly? Like,
they just do it, and it doesn't make any sense.
Right.
Okay. So, one more thing here. To me, a huge missed opportunity is them taking off in the house and immediately showing up in Venezuela. First of all, it's really shocking to think. Okay, this is a house on balloons. So think of a hot air balloon. It has no propulsion. It If it were to drift to Venezuela, it would take weeks.
Let me get the blueprints out for it. Let me get the blueprints out. And yet
it goes the speed of a 747 because, you know, Carl falls asleep, wakes up, and they're in Venezuela. Okay. That's ridiculous.
Hold on. That's part of the humor. Because he's old and he takes a freaking nap, all right? Yeah, and that nap takes a long time. Yeah. So it's that kind of comical irony of like how long it would be, you know, like that's what's funny.
Well, I think you have to factor in the whole storm in there because it's sort of like it's more like a Wizard of Oz style.
Yeah,
you know?
You're right. The
tornado lifts the house up and it lands it in Oz, you know? And basically this South American location was sort of the Oz, you know, it was like it picked it up and it landed it in this new place that was sort of do I kind of agree with you that they sort of got there too soon? Yes, I would say a movie that comes to mind is Atlantis, if you ever saw that, where I'm thinking, oh wow, I'm excited about this movie. I want to see them journey to Atlantis,
and how
to get there. And I swear it was within the first 20 minutes of the movie, they're like, we made it to Atlantis. And I'm like, really? That's all it took was like you just drilled for a little while and boom, you made it to Atlantis. Like you didn't have to like solve the clues or the mystery or any of this. Like you just found a map and you went there. And it was like, obviously their focus was more on after Atlantis, but then I'm kind of like, well, why didn't you just call it something else? You know, why didn't you just call it Adventure in Other Place that's not Atlantis, you know? Because half of the fun should really be like solving the mystery of where it is and how to get there and why it's been lost. Like, it's been lost for thousands of years, and yet we found it in like 20 minutes, you know?
Well, and
like,
that's, the main issue I have with this is I felt like, you know, a movie called Up, you know, there could be this great journey.
You kind of thought, I kind of agree with that. You could think, oh, it's going to be the journey of this thing flying. Now, that expectation is kind of set from that teaser trailer.
Yeah, you know, that's
true. That was like the only expectation I had was like, he's going to fly in this house.
The movie should have been called Down.
That's a down.
Just touched down, like within the first 5 minutes,
touchdown.
You know?
Yeah, there were definitely some down moments, you know? You know, I mean, everyone cries within the first 20 minutes, so it's down, you know?
Downer.
like, heads up, everybody, you know? Like, this movie will, this is, you know, we're just going to call it Depressed, you know?
It's very
that'll
dark.
Set expectations right there.
Blood and all that,
But it was clear that I mean, after they get there and things are happening, it's like, okay, well, it's not really about the journey here. It's not about getting to that place because, yes, he gets there. And he gets there and the house is there. And then it's like, well, now what?
Yeah.
You know, he lands his house. That was his goal, was to put that house on the falls. And once he does that, then it's kind of like, but now what?
Well, that's the thing.
Really,
that's why I think
anything.
There was a huge missed opportunity.
And so he was realizing, you know, there's more
to this
than just putting this house here.
I see what Tim's saying, though, in the idea that, like, maybe if it would have taken a longer time to get there, then once you're there, like, oh, we finally made
you
up
have
that
a little
long
more
journey, then it feels a little more like, huh, yeah, now what?
I guess there should have been more storms. We should have had 10 more minutes
of different storms.
Yeah, like, because how much adventures can you really have flying look at that cloud.
No, there's a lot of movies that...
he should have pulled out the Mario whistle.
And Stardust was one of them, but where, you know, there can be exciting things that happen
Sky
in the
Pirates.
Air.
Sky Pirates.
Right.
But,
gay sky pirates.
I would say, yeah, I was really taken out of it.
Up needed more gay sky pirates.
What's that?
Sorry.
Up needed more gay sky pirates.
I wouldn't go there, but it was really just shocking to me when they not only get to Venezuela like within 5 minutes, but he's literally, you know, 100 feet or not 100 feet, but maybe a mile from his destination. And then it's like, well, I guess he's just going to get there, but obviously other stuff happens in between. But it seems like, you know, making that 1 mile trek was taking forever. And yet when the dogs show up, they're like, we're going to take you to our boss. And immediately they're there, you know, and then, okay, we're going to go over here. Okay, they're there immediately. It seemed like only when they're trying to get to the falls does it take a long time. And everything else that happens in the film seems kind of rushed. Like they just got there, you know.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that they didn't bore us with true. We're walking to the cave for, you know, 3 days or however, you know, I'm like, wow, this movie's getting really long, you know, like, you know, cut to where they actually show up to the cave.
But so my point is, I don't think they should have landed them, you know, that close to the falls. I think there could have been even a journey in the jungle trying to get to this, look how high up that is, or, you know, look how far away that is, or, you know, how are we going to get there sort of thing. But that kind of bugged me.
I would say the most disappointing thing to me was how the place looked. I mean, I know they based it off of a real life location, which I think kind of worked against it a little bit, because it's kind of boring compared to what an animated film should have as far as fantastical, you know, seeing like looking out and just seeing like this really bland expanse of green with a couple clouds floating over it and like a tall rocky hill, you know, that surrounds it. It's like, this is the place, you know, like, but I guess it is kind of nice in the idea of like,
I liked it more like that because it made it seem a little more real and not so cartoonish, like magical land of like unrealism.
I want to balance in between those two. Okay. Mm-hmm. I think it was a little too far onto that one side.
Well, they did say in the commentaries that once he did land the house and you see where the house is and what it is around the falls, they intentionally made it look not so great because that's at the point where Carl realizes, like, I did all this for what kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. I did all this work and this is it.
Yeah, they don't want you to like where he put the house. It's like...
Interesting.
It kind of... That dream was pointless. And then, you know, he goes into the house and he sees what Ellie did, and then, you know, that he really realizes the folly of his ways.
That is a really, to me, that is maybe the most touching moment of the whole movie.
It is
when
very,
he turns that page and he sees the pictures that she put, you know, in the rest of that book.
Well, and then
spoiler alert.
They play that's another point where they play Ellie's theme, and that really ties you back to, you know,
I'm bawling right now just thinking about it. Honestly,
it's beautiful. But a couple suggestions real quick. I think...
Oh my god.
By the way, the movie's done. They're not changing anything at this point.
If they make Up 2, you know, if they want to remake it. Just a couple things to think about.
No. The sequel will be called And Up.
Up and Up.
Yeah.
Think about this. What if they made Russell a girl?
I don't even know what to say to that.
Here's the thing. You know, you got Ellie as a female character, and she dies within the first 5 minutes. Pixar movies don't have many female characters at all.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I can kind of see where you're coming from with that. I mean, I thought that they cast Russell really well, and so knowing how it turned out, I wouldn't change it because I thought it worked really well. But I think it could work.
It could have tied Ellie things. You know, he could have seen a little of Ellie in this girl in some ways, you know, like the adventurous spirit sort of thing.
But there are plenty of young girl protagonists in Disney films. And so I don't feel like it's missing a huge, I don't feel like it's a huge missed opportunity. You know, a movie like Bolt, for instance, you know, has a really good young female protagonist.
I think that the having the character be a boy was more like, hey, look, it's you when you were a kid. Like, it's like the kid version of himself with the older version of himself.
Oh, I don't agree.
I don't think he was anything like
like him.
Well, he only in the idea that he had like that sense of adventure. He just wanted to go out and go explore and go do all these things. And now as an old man, he's like, I don't want to do those things.
He didn't seem to have that. He and Ellie were like each other, but Russell was more like he was just trying to get his badge. You know, it was like he had some sense of exploration. He was enthusiastic, but it wasn't about like exploring new worlds and everything.
Right. Well, he did come to a realization that, you know, he really attached himself to Kevin and getting Kevin to his baby. So he had this sense of purpose,
right?
And Carl didn't really care, but. To me, Carl was a little bit of a letdown in that even throughout the whole montage of his life, he seemed more of a passive observer to Ellie's life than any kind of active participant. Like, he never You never see him.
Yeah, but that kind of makes him sweet in a way. You know, it's that's his personality, and it was kind of sweet to see they had this sort of balance of, you know, her exuberance with his quietness, you know, mm-hmm. and she says, you know, you don't talk much, do you? You know, I like that.
Right,
and,
right.
And, you know, that's kind of sweet in a way. And that's because it just gives him a sense, you know, it gives the audience a sense of here's who this character is. And so then when he really does become active, you know, he's, you know, an active senior per se. You feel
Ellie
a little stronger about, okay, he's really doing something now. He's really doing something, you know.
A little too late, but yeah.
Well, obviously, you know, with the house, you know, he does finally say, hey, I am going to take us to Paradise Falls, you know, and he goes and buys those tickets, you know, and it's like, yeah, this is awesome, you know, and when he, you know, puts his mind to it to move the house and everything, you know, you're kind of like, yeah, you know, you get behind him because you know that he wouldn't just do this on a whim.
Right.
Yeah, I think, and maybe this was wrong of me, but
it was.
Yeah, probably. Okay. I was rooting more for
months. Wow.
I was rooting more for Carl to get his house to the falls than I was for the stupid bird to get to her babies.
Oh wow.
So
wow.
In that sense,
he is,
I was
heartless.
Like, I really wanted Carl to succeed. I'm like, this kid's in his annoying quest to get this stupid bird. Like, he's ruining everything. And then when the house gets lit on fire, I'm like, no. Like,
yeah, oh,
that
my
was
God.
Huge.
The house gets lit on fire. I just
and,
about.
And then it's supposed to be like all negative because Carl does the same thing. And then you're like, how dare you let them take the bird? And I'm like, well, what is he going to do? He's going to defend himself against 100 dogs?
I can see it both ways. You know, I did not necessarily disagree with Carl's choice to go after the house. He was in a tough position. I don't feel like the filmmakers necessarily, you know, agreed with Russell. That was just how Russell felt,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
was like, this was more important, you know, because Russell doesn't have that connection to the house. So of course he doesn't care. He's like, you know, the bird is what he cares more about, not the house. He doesn't have that connection to it. But since we have seen Russell's life, I'm sorry, since we have seen Carl's life, we have that connection to the house and you know,
that is
we want it
to
get there. Yeah, we do.
Yeah. Yeah, that was just an observation. Interesting that I'm like, is it wrong of me to be caring more about the house than the bird? But the bird to me,
if it's wrong, I don't want to be right.
Exactly, the bird to me, while it was kind of funny in a lot of ways, it lacked any kind of character that would make me care for it. And to me, that's the nature of it being so much like a bird and its facial. There's no expression, you know.
Right.
And that's kind of funny because that's birds really don't, you know, smile and stuff like that. But It kind of, it made me really not care less about whether the bird. It's like, you know, Muntz has been on this quest for 60 years. Why why can't he shoot the bird and redeem himself, you know? Mm-hmm. But Muntz to me was, I almost wonder if the story would be better without a villain at all, because a lot of Pixar movies don't have villains, and there's still conflict that happens that, you know, moves the story along. And I think if the main point is to have Carl realize that getting his house there isn't the most important thing, and that, you know, this kid and his life and thinking of others as he used to when he thought of Ellie and not himself. A lot of things could have happened that didn't have this conventional kind of villain with his henchman type of thing that might have made it more interesting.
I actually think that the villain was a good choice to have. It did move the story along. I felt it advanced it in a way that added a nuance, and the villain wasn't so one noted. I mean, they had some motivations that you could sort of understand. You know, for me, again, Monsters, Inc. being my least favorite Pixar film, that was also one that had a villain that I just didn't feel like was necessary. You know, I was just like, this isn't working for me. You know, this villain character just isn't happening. You know, I'm not enjoying this. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, I would have probably been more on the side of saying, yeah, don't use a villain. And then but the way they did it, I thought it worked just fine.
Well, yeah, when you think of him as a foil to Carl, they're both on this, you know, they both have this mission, and Carl could become Muntz if he didn't catch himself and find his heart there, you know, like
exactly, yeah.
There is something there.
He could be the person that, you know, people show up and you know, he offs them because they won't help him move his house or whatever, you know.
Right.
What I mean, it's like becomes this disturbing, you know, so obsessed with, you know, your goal that you're not seeing the bigger picture.
Right. So in that sense, you know, he does work as a foil to Carl, but you know, I still wonder if that was is that was really necessary or not. But anyhow,
well, you guys, it's been fun.
None of this is going into the podcast, I'm sure.
Yeah. Good luck with your
Let's put it this way. When we recorded with John Watts, we went about an hour 5 minutes, and we're at the 50-minute mark right now, and we still have the rest of the podcast to do.